Thank you for those of you who've attended today. This is a slightly different focus from some of the other papers we've had in this panel and in earlier panels on the crisis. We're really trying to focus here on the aspect of popular response to the crisis, looking at public opinion and what we've done. The initial paper proposal was actually focusing on Greece, Portugal and Spain, but in light of current events we think it's more sensible to actually focus on the four countries, although they're being affected to varying extents by the crisis and it's playing out differently in their domestic politics. It looked more sensible to actually look at the four countries rather than the three. And of course what we're looking at is a really preliminary investigation, because this is very much a crisis that's fluid and evolving all the time. In terms of the paper, what we're looking at? Well, one of the features we're looking at is the crisis and the idea of the EU having output legitimacy. Public support for the European Union isn't necessarily predicated on its democratic legitimacy, because that's often contested and questioned, but the EU has often been seen as delivering the goods, particularly for some of the newer member states, so it has output legitimacy. It might not have real democratic participation, but it has output legitimacy in terms of the goods, the welfare that the populations get in EU member states. But particularly we want to look at, is this something that's in question because of the crisis? In earlier periods of economic recession, we've seen public support for the EU go down often across member states. And now we've got a particularly difficult set of circumstances for some of these countries. Is the EU's output legitimacy under threat during the current crisis? I'll just run you through is sort of two key research questions we're looking at. Just some trend data which just shows you declining general support in recent years, obviously during the time of the crisis, and then a bit more detail on the analysis we've done, the data source we're using, the method, some of the dependent variables we've been looking at, the theoretical approaches and some of the independent variables, and then a brief run through the findings and then a summary. So a bit more on this idea of output legitimacy. As I said, traditionally public opinion has often been thought to rest on the goods that the EU delivers, whether that be it's the economic welfare it gives to countries, whether that gives democratic consolidation, political benefits, modernisation, these sorts of things. So there's this idea of output legitimacy, which the EU needs in order to have public support, public trust in the European Union. And more recently, there's been actually a strand of work, a couple of studies actually looking specifically at the European Central Bank and whether the crisis and the ECB's role in the crisis has actually led to a decline in public trust in European Central Bank. We're looking more widely, but there's work out there looking at this particular institution. So the wider context is obviously the member states, the four member states in Southern Europe, have been affected by the Eurozone crisis to varying extents and in different ways, and it's something that's evolving, but we're particularly interested in looking at whether the crisis is actually leading to a loss of trust in the EU within the public opinion in these countries, and also whether public opinion is actually changing in terms of the benefits, the instrumental benefits of membership, is that declining as well in this backdrop. And another factor is just generally that we're in this strange phrase that's been used in article by Hooger and Marx, is that we're now in this era of constrained dissensus, when the elites aren't so much able to push forward with European integration. They have to look over their shoulders at public opinion in their countries, because the EU is a much more contentious issue in domestic politics. Now an added factor is the role of the crisis in certain countries as well. So that's the wider backdrop to what we're looking at, and our analysis we're trying to situate within two areas of research: the much wider EU public opinion literature, which has been going on, but also some more recent studies of Euroscepticism in some of the southern European countries, which have perhaps been neglected dimension, but there's some more recent work looking at Euroscepticism based around parties and actors in some of these countries. So we've got our research questions we split into two areas, which may end up being two separate papers, but at the moment it's included within the same paper. The first research question is looking at general support for the European Union in these four countries: Italy, Spain, Greece and Portugal. Firstly, we want to look at support, utilitarian support for the EU, the benefits you get from membership, and secondly, trust within the European Union. So we want to see whether these have declined, and in particular looking at which individual level characteristics actually relate to support for the EU and trust, or a lack of both, if you like. And the second area we're looking at is more specific crisis-related issues, on which there is now good quality survey data available as a result of Eurobarometer surveys in the last couple of years. And in terms of the crisis-related issues, we want to look at people within the population who actually think that they would have been better off if their countries had retained their national currencies rather than going to the single currency. Secondly, what affects attitudes towards the role of the euro during the crisis? You know, as people think that the euro has actually ameliorated the effects of the crisis on them. And also, a third angle on this is what actually affects attitudes towards domestic reforms in these countries. The reforms of countries, you can say, are being compelled or needing to carry out as part of the funding bailouts they've got from the EU and the IMF, who opposes or supports these sorts of reforms, and how that relates to, you know, securing better conditions for the next generation. And just to sort of run through the sorts of theoretical approaches which we find in the wider literature on EU and public opinion, and which we've used to inform the analysis and the sorts of variables we can put into our analysis. Huger and Marx, two of the big names who sort of study public opinion on the European Union, they tend to divide the field up into three areas in terms of the factors that might affect public support for the European Union. Firstly, people's economic interests, you know, which underpins support for the EU. Now, the sorts of variables for that, traditionally looking at people's education or their employment status, occupation, and also looking at people's own subjective economic perceptions. How do you feel the economy is in your country? These sorts of things, your household. So economic interest is perhaps the most well-established sort of theoretical approach to explaining how people view the European Union. A second theoretical approach is the role of group identities. So national identity is a good example, but there are others out there as well. Support for the European Union can be affected by whether people feel they have a national, exclusive national identity, or whether they feel more cosmopolitan, or even by regional identity as well. And the third theoretical approach we're looking at is that people's views, attitudes towards the European Union, which can be quite a complex remote subject, is actually rooted in political cues rooted in their own domestic politics. So people's views on European Union issues can be affected by their own left-right beliefs. It can be affected by their evaluations of domestic institutions, government, parliament, the parties, and also can be affected by their involvement in politics as well. And obviously, partisanship is an important question, but we don't have measures of that in the data source, but that's another one. So thirdly, people's views on European issues can be affected by the political cues rooted in domestic politics. And then, as always, in these sorts of models, we have to put in controls for some of the standard demographics, gender and age. Even if we have no prior expectations about how they would perform, we still put them in and try and address any omitted variable bias from the models. Okay, so just before we go to the sort of nuts and bolts of the analysis, just a couple of examples of declining support for the European Union. Now, this first graph looks at a standard question which has been asked, I think, since the 1970s. It just asks simply, does your country benefit from EU membership? And this is asked about twice a year by Eurobarometer surveys. Do you benefit, not benefit? You can see here there's been a clear decline, certainly in the last year or two, in people actually thinking that their country benefits from the European Union. And this decline has occurred generally across all four of the countries we're looking at in the analysis as well. And then a second graph on another indicator. This is a question that asks whether you trust the European Union or not. Again, we can see here a clear decline in the context of the current crisis as well. There are a couple of other indicators you could use to try and look at general support for the European Union, but you know, there's no point basing a presentation on graph after graph, but this just gives you an indicator that the public mood, if you like, has soured with the EU on two of the indicators here, benefit from membership and trust in the EU. Okay, so moving along, as I said, to the nuts and bolts of the analysis, what are we looking at? Well, we're using the Eurobarometer, which is the European Commission's own long-standing social survey of European Union countries and also candidate countries and other countries that might be joining. This is carried out twice a year, standard Eurobarometer. It's really the workhorse of people that are doing comparative analysis of public opinion across European Union countries, because it's high quality data. It's made available pretty quickly after the surveys, but the fieldwork's been carried out, and it has a lot of interesting questions on European Union, but also related to domestic politics. So the most recently available survey we've got, which is useful for our analysis, was the May 2010. So again, as I state, you know, the crisis has moved on since then, but this is the most recently available data set we can get for our purposes. It's a cross-sectional survey, as I said, the 27 member states plus several EU candidate countries as well, such as Turkey, other countries like that. What we've just looked at is there's separate country samples which you could either put together if you want to do cross-national analysis. What we wanted to do is actually to analyse these separately. So we've got samples around 1,000 cases for each of these countries because we want to try and compare the effects of variables across models. And we've run, the details are obviously at the back of the paper, but we've run model estimations for each country. In each case, we've just used binary logistic regression, so our outcome or our dependent variable is coded as 1 or 0, and all the estimates are contained in the paper. And we were interested in particularly comparing the effects of these different variables across countries to see whether they're similar explanatory factors or whether they do differ in some interesting respects. The dependent variables, we've got 5. There's 2 which relate to general support. Again, this benefits question. 1 if you benefit, 0 if you think the country's not benefiting. Then we've got the trust question again. And then we've got 3 much more specific questions which relate to the economic crisis. There's a question which asks about whether you think the country would have been better protected in the face of the crisis if we'd actually kept the national currency. So that's obviously asked to each of the country samples. Should we have kept the national currency? And a second related question asks people whether they think the euro has actually mitigated, has it helped in terms of ameliorating the effects of the current financial and economic crisis? And then a third question which relates to the wider debates in domestic politics about reform is asked, are you actually ready to reduce your living standards now in order to guarantee the future of the next generations in your country? And again, we've just got a dichotomous dependent variable, 1 and 0 for that. So these are the dependent variables, the first 2 looking at general support for the EU, or diffuse support if you like, and then there's 3 other questions which very much relate to more current issues about the economic crisis. So just to sort of take you through, rather than paste in very complex statistical blizzard of tables, just to try and give a sort of quick written summary of the findings, and then if you want to look in more detail at the estimates, they're obviously presented at the back of the paper. In terms of modelling general support for the EU across the 4 countries, we find that there are really quite common effects of some of the independent variables across countries. National identity is often seen as a very fertile, a very important consequential variable for attitudes towards the European Union. We find that those who possess an exclusive national identity, i.e. only identify with their country rather than having a multiplicity of identities, you know, part national, part European, we find that they're much less likely to agree that the EU benefits their country, and they're much less likely as well to trust the EU in the models. In terms of other characteristics, what we find tends to fit with existing profiles of people who tend to be more pro-European or who tend to be more Eurosceptic. We find that people with higher levels of education, those who have positive economic assessments, so who perceive themselves to be more secure in their economic circumstances, those who have greater trust in national level institutions, so more trust in their government, their parties, their parliament, subnational authorities, and also those who engage in more frequent political discussion, which sometimes people use as a measure of political sophistication involvement in politics. We find people who have these characteristics, they're more likely to believe that their country benefits from membership, and they're more likely to trust the EU. And now these findings tend to generally relate to what we know from existing wisdom from the literature on the EU and public opinion, although sometimes the national trust thing is flipped, and what they found in the past is that people that have more negative views, less trust in their national institutions, tend to be more trusting of EU institutions as well. It's particularly relevant to countries when they've gone through processes of democratic consolidation and may have just joined the European Union. But we find here greater trust in national institutions leads to more likely to trust the European Union itself. And particularly strong effects, as I said, for exclusive national identity and also for economic perceptions. And these effects tend to be consistent in the direction of the relationship across models, and the models explain a reasonable proportion of the variance. Now, the models aren't as detailed as you might get if we had country-specific data, country-specific surveys, but we've obviously got standardised surveys, but the models explain a reasonable proportion of the variance. And in terms of the second set of findings, which relate to these three crisis-related issues, again, we find that some of the factors that predict support for the EU on the general measures also predict more positive views on crisis-related issues. So in terms of retaining the national currency, well, we've got those who disagree with the proposition of retaining the national currency coded as one. We find that you're more likely to disagree if you're male, well-educated, trust national institutions, you have positive economic perceptions, or discuss politics frequently. So these people are less likely, they're more likely to disagree with the statement that we should have retained the national currency throughout the crisis. But you're less likely to disagree if you have an exclusive national identity. So if you have an exclusive national identity, you're more likely to have a positive view on actually retaining the national currency throughout the crisis. And then for this related question on whether the euro actually mitigated the impact of the crisis, people are more likely to agree with that if, again, they trust their domestic institutions. If they have higher levels of education in Greece and Portugal, then this variable wasn't significant in the other two countries, and they're less likely to agree with this statement if they have an exclusive national identity. Again, so there's some commonality in terms of the factors with explanatory value. And then this final question about whether you're prepared to accept a reduction in living standards for sort of, securing better conditions, better prospects for future generations. People are more likely to agree with this, or if you like, more likely to give a pro-reform response to this question if they have higher trust in national institutions, perhaps because they're agreeing with reform programmes proposed by governments, by political parties. If they're more frequent political discussion, and again, higher education, which is always a key variable for public opinion on the EU, but again, this is on this question, it's just significant in Italy and Portugal. And these models generally explain lower proportions of variance in the dependent variable than the previous set of models, which does highlight that sometimes it's very helpful to have country-specific surveys where you may have variables more tailored to the national level, which can actually do more explaining. But again, we're using a standardised Eurobarometer, so we have to have just a standard set of variables across the country models. Okay, so that's like a summary of the findings. These are preliminary models. These can always be revised, etc. In terms of the summary, what have we been trying to do? Well, what we've tried to do is do a micro-level analysis of the factors affecting public attitudes, Eurosceptic attitudes in the four countries, Greece, Spain, Portugal, and Italy. The work, as I say, both builds on the wider literature on the EU and public opinion, but also builds on some of the recent work that's been looking at Euroscepticism in these four countries, in society, amongst political parties, amongst public opinion. There are some key variables missing, which you think would be important for these questions. Eurobarometer, rather infuriatingly, only infrequently measures partisanship, which is important for these sorts of questions. But is the data you're given, unless you've got a big funding grant and you can go out there and do your own survey, you can then design your ideal set of questions. Also, other social characteristics which might be important for attitudes on these issues, such as religion. Again, Eurobarometer asks about this once every 5 years, which annoys some analysts more than others. In terms of the analysis, there's a trade-off, as I said, between using a standardised cross-national survey, which enables you to estimate similar models for countries, and having country-specific surveys where some of these variables, which might actually be available. And I think some of the sorts of work in terms of analysing changes in public opinion in the crisis could also be extended to some of the other areas of attitudes towards the EU. Are there changes in public opinion in terms of the policy competences between the EU and the national level? Is there now more support or less support for perhaps giving the EU greater policy-making powers in some of the areas relating to economic fiscal policy, which are very much an important part of debates at the national and the EU level now, about giving the EU more powers in certain areas, greater cooperation? So that's something also I think we'll look at as well. Okay.
Okay, thank you.